Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Yo, what's good, New York? I'm Jack Devine, he, him pronouns, and you are listening to Revolutions Per Minute live from the new WBAI studios. We're a socialist radio show and podcast for members of the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. The DSA is the largest socialist organization in the United States, with 56,000 members nationwide, and NYC DSA is its biggest chapter. We are run by our 5,500-plus members and organizers who are working together to build democratic socialism in all five boroughs. Late Thursday, the Trump administration recklessly assassinated Iranian General Qassem Soleimani. The dangerous actions of the U.S. empire could ultimately lead to a devastating war with Iran. The Democratic Socialists of America announced that the organization emphatically opposes a U.S. war with Iran. In light of the U.S.'s act of war against Iran, putting the two nations close to the brink of war, DSA has called on members and chapters to mobilize against yet another U.S. war in the Middle East. We're joined today by Saper Mekarami, a leader in NYC DSA anti-war working group, who helped organize the protest outside New York Senator Chuck Schumer's apartment this past Friday to discuss why a war with Iran would be so barbaric and how socialists are organizing to oppose U.S. imperial aggression. Times like these show the urgent need for anti-imperialist and anti-capitalist political education. Later in the episode, we're joined by Robbie Nelson, who is helping organize Central Brooklyn DSA's upcoming night school series. But first, a live reading of the headlines with me. Following the anti-Semitic attack on Hanukkah gathering in Muncie, New York, Mayor de Blasio announced a plan to increase NYPD presence in neighborhoods with significant Jewish populations. Are the NYPD really the best group to protect communities under threat by state and fascist violence? After being arrested for drunk driving on New Year's Eve, State Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb will not resign, but will step down as the leader of the Assembly Republicans. Governor Cuomo signaled that he will revamp the push to end the ban on gestational surrogacy in the state during the 2020 legislative session. New York lost an estimated 76,790 residents in 2019, the most of any state. Depending on the outcome and participation in the 2020 census, it is possible that New York could lose up to two congressional seats. In international news, France and the workers there today occupied the Blackstone building and corporate headquarters in Paris. This is a representation of the growing tensions in both the capital and throughout France. There is an intensifying class war there and around the globe. So we at Revolutions Per Minute will continue to update our listeners on this very, very crucial development and see where it takes the progress of the global struggle against capital and empire. Our daily headlines are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by NYC DSA Electoral Working Group covering local politics and radical activism. Subscribe at thethorn.nyc. And as we spoke about in our introduction to today's show, the war on Iran is on everyone's mind who either is a imperialist or someone who is opposed to U.S. imperialism. The potential conflict there could be absolutely devastating for the people in Iran and across the Middle East, but also a way to divert resources in this country away from working and poor people and towards the arms manufacturers, oil production companies, and a large swath of the corporate elite that benefit financially from war, and a way for the Trump administration to distract from all the immense crises here in the United States and kind of build this jingoistic hatred towards an other while avoiding the real problems that face the American people. So on Friday, in response to the attack by the Trump administration, NYC DSA and partner with other coalition organizations organized a rapid response protest at New York Senator Chuck Schumer's apartment in Park Slope. We're going to roll a clip from that protest where he spoke directly to the protesters and asked them why they were involved in such an action. Let's roll that clip right now.
No war, no KKK, no fascist USA. No war, no KKK, no fascist USA.
So we're here outside Chuck Schumer's apartment, and can you just let us know, what is NYC DSA's anti-war working group's statement about the potential war in Iran?
We want to show that Chuck Schumer should be embarrassed that he gave a blank check to the Trump administration to wage wars on countries that were trying to make peace with us through the NDAA that he voted for. Shame on him, shame on Schumer, and shame on the Democrats.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So you're out here at this really impressive action, helping hold things together. How does something like this come about, and why is it so important that people are turning out to stand against this war in Iran?
I think this is something that we're obviously extremely directly responsible for, both like the assassination that was carried out yesterday, but also going back to like 1953, right? Like when the US and the UK orchestrated a coup and overthrew the democratically elected government in Iran. So what a lot of people don't realize is that this is, you know, decades and decades of foreign policy, and we have a lot of blood on our hands. But at the same time, I think that, you know, you see a turnout like this for an action that was called literally last night, and I think a lot of people are getting it as well, that, you know, we're already fighting so many forever wars that are just rich people's wars, and we've got to put a stop to it. We've got to refuse to fight and refuse to pay for them, refuse any complicity with it.
Yeah, it really seems like people are ready to take a stand against imperialism, so thank you so much
for that.
And that was one of many protests that had been organized by DSA across the country in partnership with many coalition organizations that are opposed to imperialism and are really fighting to stop what would be a just absolutely devastating war with Iran. So it's really encouraging to see people get out in the streets and, you know, make a statement. And really, I think they helped force Chuck Schumer to condemn this action, because the next day he did put out a tweet saying that this was a reckless action by Trump. So direct action does get the goods. So right now we are joined by one of the lead organizers of that protest. Sapere, can you hear us right now?
Yes. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. So before we dive in specifically to the situation in Iran, I would just like to, you know, hear a little bit about your background. We like to make our guests, make our audience acquainted with our guests and kind of their history of organizing. So, like, what forces pushed you to join the movement for socialism? Why did you join DSA specifically? And what sort of organizing have you been engaged in?
I do believe that socialism and, by extension, the Democratic Socialists of America are one of the only groups of activists in the country that believe that the fight for equality, you know, whether it's racial justice and social justice in general, and economic justice, and the fight to defund the military-industrial complex, and the fight against the war machine, and a fight for climate justice, and all of that, and the issues that the left is passionate about, is one and should be one unified fight, and they should organize in coordination and according to that, basically. And once I realized that, I joined PSA, and mostly I've been active with the anti-war working group and organizing with them, and as well as sometimes I join the Red Rabbits and give them a shout out and thank them for helping us organize last Friday's event and on such short notice. Yeah,
one of the last, the end of the clip, we were talking with one of the Red Rabbits who was so critical in making the protest as organized and I believe as effective as it was. So definitely the Red Rabbits deserve a shout out. And I, the way you were just framing that is something that we hear a lot here on RPM, kind of the connection between DSA's long-term vision of a society organized around equality and human need and the direct connection to action, that it's not just these ideas, but that DSA is actually working to implement them in practice. And obviously, it's a long and hard struggle. And I think we'll kind of expand more on the work that you're doing with anti-war in a little bit. But before we dive into that, just for our listeners who may be unfamiliar with Iran and Iranian politics, who was Qassem Soleimani? What has been the reaction to his death in Iran? And why was the Trump's administration and why was their action so reckless?
Major General Qassem Soleimani was the head of the Quds forces of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, and which is basically the arm of the Revolutionary Guards, which is one of the branches of the armed forces of Iran that was mostly responsible for foreign operations. He gained fame after his main role in organizing militias in Iraq and Syria in the fight against ISIS and in the campaign, Iranian campaign against, military campaign against ISIS, and basically became famous in the world and in Iran for those achievements. And the reaction to his death in Iran has been, well, we know that there has, I mean, thousands, tens of thousands of people have took to the streets to mourn his death and condemn his assassination. But on the other hand, there has been a coordinated campaign, a media campaign effort of people trying to change the conversation from what we should be having, which is, you know, what are the implications of assassinating of a foreign major general by the United States is, and distracting that to whether or not this person was a good person or a bad person, and what his actions have been in the past. And well, obviously, you know, it is just unprecedented to assassinate a major general of a country that we are not in war with and is considered an act of war, and that is definitely very, very reckless action.
Yeah, I think you hit on something really important, and I think it highlights why it's so critical to have media like this that is not owned by corporation and capital, or even like there's NPR, but it's public quote unquote radio, but it's mostly funded by big corporate donors, is that they present this perspective that is on behalf of U.S. empire and capital. They want to shift the conversation, as you're saying, that, oh, this was a really bad guy. He was so terrible. That's completely beside the point. One, he was a general. Generals kill people in war. War, exactly. It tends to be a bad thing. You think this guy has a lot of bodies on him? I would do some research on American generals and the American foreign policy apparatus. The hundreds of thousands of people. They've killed over a million in the Middle East in just the past like two decades alone. And then we can go back to Vietnam and a number of other conflicts that the U.S. has committed genocide in. So for the media to be framing, and Democratic politicians to be framing this conversation along the lines of some moral judgment, like, oh, this guy's a bad guy, we need to kill him, is so, I mean, it's so absurd that it basically is taking, making American, it's a framing things in a way that it's like, oh, Americans are so naive that they're going to fall into this trap that it's like good and bad guys. But anyone who has any idea of what happened in Iraq and the invasion that took place there in 2003 and its aftermath must feel like talked down upon, because it's so ridiculous to act as if the United States is an innocent player in this. It's so reckless that we just assassinated the official of a sovereign state and someone who had a high level of popularity in that country. Is there anything else you want to add to that? Sorry for going on a bit of a rant there. It's just been really bothering me over this past few days.
No, it was it's actually perfect, because, yes, as you pointed out, and I forgot to point out, even our Democratic presidential nominees have all been just repeating the same thing about him being a bad person. Even Senator Warren has been saying that, and the only person who has not been distracted by that conversation has been Senator Sanders. And he immediately condemned that action by the Trump administration and introduced introduce the Kana-Sanders bill that would hopefully limit the administration's power of war.
Yeah, if it wasn't already extremely clear, this past week has been clarifying, and that if you want to support an anti-war candidate, Bernie Sanders is the anti-war candidate in this race. So just to kind of explore what the actual implications of this action could be, can you elaborate a little bit on why a war with Iran would be so particularly devastating, and why socialists must oppose this war and all other imperial conflicts?
Of course. Well, obviously, any war is bad, and there is absolutely no reason for us to go to war with Iran. But also, I think there has been, a deliberate miscalculation on the Trump administration's part, in that they have been defining or at least showing the Iranian people's discontent and criticism towards their government as an invitation for foreign intervention by the United States, which is absolutely not true. There has been protests in Iran, and I think as socialists, if we want to stand in solidarity with workers across the world, we should make sure that when they are in their fight against fighting the oppressors and people that they want change from, we don't interfere in that and disrupt that by waging war on them. Now, Iran is not remotely even comparable to any of the other countries that we've went to war with in the Middle East, such as Afghanistan and Iraq, because it is a bigger country, and the state of affairs in that country are not the same at all as they were with Afghanistan and Iraq. It would definitely tens of thousands of people will die in such a war if that happens. Millions of people will be displaced, and the suffering is just incalculable. I can't imagine what would happen. It would be truly destabilizing to the region, again, this is a very, very, very dangerous move by the United States. Socialists should oppose this war as they should oppose any war because of all the reasons we've been opposing any war. Climate change, the fact that everything is getting defunded and the funding has been poured into the military industrial complex and the weapons manufacturing. If we want to support the other people in the world and stand in solidarity with them, as I said, as they protest and as they try to change their lives for the better, we have to make sure that our imperial that our government's imperial agenda doesn't mess with that, basically.
Yeah, I think you bring up a number of really important points on both the question of why this would be so devastating and why socialists should oppose this kind of war. It's one, and like what you're hinting at with the like that socialists should always stand with the working class in these other countries and when they're fighting their oppressors. What this war does is it brings together the Iranian ruling class and working class against a common enemy. And understandably so, because the U.S. is a danger to all of them. And I think that's been proven time and time again by our actions in the Middle East and all the imperial conflicts that we've engaged in throughout our history. So it's not some irrational move for the Iranians to unite in an anti-imperial conflict, but that smothers over the class struggle within that country. So this is in service of the interest of Trump's actions only furthered Iranian nationalism. And along those lines, and as you were saying, Iran is a different sort of beast than the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. It has a very capable, not just military, but intelligence operations and a capacity to strike back against the U.S. in a way that nowhere that we have invaded since the Second World War has a capacity to strike back against the United States. And the geography of the country makes any sort of invasion inevitably devastating. The U.S. In 2001, before Iran had really built up its capacity in the way it is now, ran a war game. Within the first day, tens of thousands of American soldiers were killed in this war game. And it was so devastating that the Pentagon was like, okay, never mind. You're not allowed to do any of those things that Iran would actually do in this sort of war. But in the bigger picture, it's so crucial for us to frame this as a way of Trump trying to divide the international working class against itself, to divide the American people against to commit to some sort of nationalism or be anti-American. It's diverting resources further in the hands of the ownerships of the arms manufacturer and financial institutions that fund war and the sort of disaster capitalist institutions that will benefit from the expropriation of Iranian resources. So it's really critical that we think about this war along all of those lines, and that we need to oppose this and we need to stand in solidarity with Iranian workers, and that we need to organize in a manner that can really stop this war from happening. So think with that in mind, how can people get involved in the struggle to stop this war? Is there anything that the anti-war working group is organizing right now that people can get involved in? Are there any meetings coming up that people can attend to help plan this organizing?
Definitely. I just want to add to what you were saying, and great points, by the way, that the sanctions that the United States government has imposed unilaterally on Iran in the past few years, and the sanctions that the Obama administration started imposing on Iran in the past decade have, as you said, shifted everything in the political atmosphere in Iran to the right, and has hurt the feminist movements in Iran, the workers movements in Iran, has hurt the NGOs, anyone who wanted to organize and has been organizing for those issues in climate and in social justices and economic justices in Iran has been hurt by those policies. And this is basically the last straw. This is the last fight, their last hope. The people are trying to make peace with the world, try to, they, in the past election, they voted a moderate into government so that they could make peace with the West. And they did get a deal, but then the United States pulled out when Trump got inaugurated. So the ball is in our court, and it is on the American people, I think, and I believe, to get involved and to change this for the better before it gets too late. And it seems like the situation is very dire and urgent right now. So I do encourage people to join us whatever, do whatever you think is best. If you want to get active, if you can't show up personally, get on Twitter, talk to your representatives. All of those things are great. We at the anti-war working group do have a strategy. We do have a legislative strategy. We have an escalation plan, like the event that we had on Friday, the protest in front of Chuck Schumer's house, and we've seen that it's been working. Our next meeting is actually tonight in 1 hour in Catholic Worker Mary House on 3rd Street in Manhattan. And we do post our events on Facebook. If you follow New York City DSA, and on Twitter, you can follow us at NYCDSA anti-war, just one word, at NYCDSA anti-war. Also, I would encourage people to head to our, Iran campaign's website, nowaroniran.org. And sign the petition that we have there to call on all the Democratic nominees to speak out against war and economic sanctions on Iran. And we do have a calendar of events there on that website as well that people can check out and definitely join us. We have a wide range of ways that people can get involved, and we would be definitely happy to have more members.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and sharing all this information in a really crucial time for people who want to get involved in this struggle. The NYC DSA Anti-War Working Group is really helping lead the fight. And so I would definitely, if you're interested in that sort of work or in getting involved in that sort of fight, they're definitely a great resource. So thank you so much for joining us. Any last comments you want to make before you hop off?
No, that's it for me. Thank you so much for having me, and thanks so much for all the hard work and the great work you've been doing.
Oh, thank you. We really, really appreciate that. And we hope to hear from you soon with good news that this war has been prevented. So I just want to remind our listeners that you are tuning in to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. Connect with us after the show. You can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com. Or you can sign up for our newsletter to get links to what we talk about on the show. You can do that on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. You can also find us on Twitter at NYCRPM. Today, we started by talking about the escalation that the Trump administration has launched into a potential devastating war with Iran, and what New York City DSA, as well as other groups that are anti-imperialist in orientation, have been doing around the city, including a protest at Chuck Schumer's apartment last Friday. And it's moments like these that really highlight why an institution like WBAI is so important. If you tune in to CNN or MSNBC and obviously the fascist Fox News, you're going to hear just relentless war propaganda, or you may be on Fox News, you hear some like fascist propaganda from Tucker Carlson where it's like, we don't want to get in this war, but it's because we hate brown people or something. So definitely don't listen to what he has to say, but you got to tune into stations like this that really, really are engaged with the community, that are centering voices and communities that you will not hear on mainstream and corporate media. So if you want to, you know, pledge in, you know, give money to the station, you want to become a buddy to this show, you can go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org and pledge in this name. Say in the name of the show, say your Revolutions Per Minute is your favorite show. You like that we're highlighting the struggles that are both taking place here in New York City and connecting them to what's happening all around the world. And something else that we're trying to do with this program is political education. It's a way of talking to people about the issues in a manner that they can both comprehend them, connect them to everything else that's going on, and center how important struggle is to not just fighting back, but to learning more about the systems that are dominating us. And today we have another guest from New York City DSA. We're joined by Robbie Nelson, who I believe recently moved here to New York after being involved in a DSA chapter in California. And he can correct me if I'm wrong about that. But he, as well as I, am involved in developing a new Central Brooklyn night school series that is kind of just a brief overview about the history of socialism, about what capitalism is, about the various struggles that have taken place throughout capitalist history. So Robbie, can you hear us? Are you there on air?
Yes. Yeah. Am I on?
Yep, you're on. Thank you so much for joining us. So before we dive in, like, to this political education series and the importance of political education in general, what forces push you to join the movement for socialism? Why did you join DSA specifically? And like, what's your experience been within DSA? What sort of organizing have you been involved in?
Well, first off, just thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to come on Revolutions Per Minute to talk about this stuff. I think I was born in 1990, and so like many others in my generation, it was sort of, the general shitstorm me, to the sense that I was to the left of liberalism, right? We had the Iraq War, the 2008 financial crisis, and, sort of the initial hopes that many of us had for, youthful enthusiasm for Barack Obama, followed by that crushing disappointment. Sort of Occupy Wall Street. So these were these sort of general things in the mid to late 2000s that were kind of pushing me left of liberalism. But it was really joining a union and subscribing to Jacobin magazine around 2012 that pushed me towards sort of identifying as a socialist. And I organized my union throughout the 2010s, and I joined DSA actually on election night, 2016. Sort of just out of a desperate sense that we needed to do something, and that I was sort of, being an unorganized socialist, being a lone socialist is kind of a contradiction in terms, and, sort of saw people flocking to DSA and thought, here's a chance to, get some really, good organizing experience in beyond just, my union. So that's kind of what brought me to socialism and DSA in particular. Like you said, I'd been in California, the last couple of years. I moved here to New York about 9 months ago. I've been involved in political education in both places, in labor committees, electoral campaigns, direct action, sort of you name it. And I think that's one of the great things about DSA is that you're not sort of pigeonholed into just doing one thing. There's a lot of opportunity to expand your horizons, and I certainly have learned so much from being part of this organization.
Yeah, I think you're hitting on the experiences that we've heard from a lot of our guests over our time here at Revolutions Per Minute. And the way you described the general situation of 21st century capitalism is something I absolutely agree with, but I just do want to remind you that we are live on air and there are certain words that we can't say. But
apologies to WBI.
No worries. I that's my fault. I feel like I didn't specifically remind you that, so that's on me. But what you're saying is really a story I think a lot of people experienced, that there was – people were kind of seeing what was happening in the world. You have – and we've been talking about it. You had the Iraq war, just the war on terror, the financial crisis, all these things that like capitalism and empire were in deep, deep crisis as we grew up. Our prospects for – better living conditions were on the decline. Wages were stagnant, and for millennials, so low. People born in our generation did not have access to the sort of opportunities that maybe the golden age of New Deal era capitalism offered to the boomers. So this, you have this kind of perspective that's molding, but the vision wasn't there yet. But you have people organizing like you in their workplace, and then at the same time, being brought access to perhaps like a vision like or a political movement like Sanders, or maybe for some people it was Occupy Wall Street, or you said you were reading Jacobin. So people had these experience on the ground, and then they're seeing things, and a vision is kind of coming together for a democratic socialism for the 21st century. And I think that is something that through political education, we can build on. We can talk to people's lived experiences and how they've seen what's happening in their society and start to develop the approaches and the understanding necessary to actually change it. So for you, like, why is political education so crucial for socialist organizing? And how has being involved in political education efforts in the past shifted your strategic perspective?
Well, I think, political education is so crucial, for, I think, a couple reasons. I do want to highlight something you just said, though, right? For me, political education is about building connection between the things that we experience in our daily lives and the broader structures, the deeper past and the broader sort of structures of society that those are connected to. So a couple things. So political education helps, activists and helps organizers gain a common vocabulary, a theoretical framework for understanding how our world works, and it helps us to learn the lessons of movements that have come before us, right? And I think in particular, I think this has been a problem on the sort of millennial left as well as the new left of the 60s, is that we often think, I think there's a tendency sometimes to forget that we're not the first people to ever struggle with these questions and contradictions. And I know actually a lot of people in and around DSA have a sort of suspicion of political education, and I'll be honest, the reason I never joined a socialist organization, DSA, was because it seemed to me, maybe rightly or wrongly, that a lot of them were just like reading groups, and that I joined DSA because I wanted to do real on-the-ground organizing at a mass scale. But I think that runs the risk of bending too far in the opposite direction, right? We do this on-the-ground work as a socialist organization, but part of the whole benefit of being in an organization of smart, engaged organizers is to collectively reflect on the work we're engaged in, right? So if we're organizing in our unions, we should know the victories and defeats of the labor movement and try to learn from the lessons of the past. We should try to understand how capitalism is changing and the sort of the way that production and distribution works in capitalism is changing. And so how can we learn from those broader analyses and sort of change or refine our on-the-ground organizing in light of those things? Obviously, the same thing goes for tenant organizing, electoral politics, organizing against police brutality, right? Any kind of organizing you're engaging in has to be you have to be engaging with how that issue or how the structures that surround that issue are changing over time. The world around us is a complex place, right? I think capitalism, racism, imperialism, gender oppression, and on, right? These things structure, these systems structure the world we live in, but they're not just sort of natural and neutral states of being. And in fact, if we sort of lose sight of those oppressive structures as natural and neutral, then we kind of forget that they have internal logics. They have weaknesses. They have people who benefit from them. And we need to study those in order to understand how we're going to overcome them. And so it's really this back and forth dialogue between, we do on the ground organizing. We learn lessons from that. We reflect those lessons on these broader histories or theoretical frameworks of people who come before us, and we can help tease out new ways of doing things. And the best thing, again, like I mentioned earlier, you can't really do political education alone, right? You can start your political education alone, and that's, I know that's been the case for a lot of people. But one of the best things about being in DSA is that, you know, you can learn from and alongside your comrades, and really collective learning, is, you know, among your comrades and among people you're organizing with is just a whole nother level from studying on your own. So I think that's sort of why political education is so crucial. Yeah,
I think, you hit on like something that is really crucial about what differentiates like a good political education program and why it's so important for socialist organizing is because it's collective reflection. It's taking both the our experiences in the fight, but also past experiences in the fight, and coming together to build a strategic perspective to win. It's not just about having the right ideas. It's about understanding the process of historical development, the central role that class struggle plays in that, and also the various ways that the ruling class, through racial domination, through gender domination, exerts its power, and how we can effectively fight those institutions, fight that, not just those institutions, but that organized power, and that the only way to do that is through building organization and capacity, but building those sort of organization capacity that is effective in fighting. So I guess now it's time to get a little more specific. So what is this upcoming Night School series in Brooklyn? What is its major focus, and how can listeners to this program attend it?
Yeah, so I'll give some dates here in a second, but I kind of just want to set this up for people. Something else that I think is important about political education in DSA in particular is that we're not the political education in DSA is not intended to teach you the specific and correct like line and opinion upon something. And in fact, part of the value of political education in DSA is that we learn how to frame debates, and we learn how to debate comradely, with other organizers in DSA. So I'll just briefly talk about the format of Night School, and then I'll get into the nitty-gritty in terms of the dates and topics. So the way that Central Brooklyn Night Schools happen is there's a short, there will be some readings posted ahead of time. People are encouraged to do the readings, but, you know, sometimes people don't do the readings. And so there's like a short 10 to 15 minute mini lecture that can help frame those discussions for people who haven't done the readings. Then we'll break out into smaller discussion groups with a structured discussion with a facilitator. And part of the purpose of that is so that we can have this really rigorous and high level discussion about socialist theory and politics, but also make it accessible. So you don't need to have read Marx, or anything like that to show up to one of these classes and engage. Because if you, if you've experienced oppression and capitalism and you're interested in organizing against it, then Central Brooklyn Night School is definitely a place for you. So we've got a couple really interesting topics. The next class, so Central Brooklyn Night Schools are once a month, and we'll do them on Thursday nights. They're at 7 to 9 p.m. at Repair the World and Nostrand Ave in Brooklyn. And the upcoming sessions are January 16th. That one's going to be entitled "What Is Capitalism?" And if you want to hear Jack talk more, clearly about what capitalism is, then you can come there. We've got another one on Thursday, February 13th. That's going to be about reform and revolution. And then we've got another one on March 12th. That's about the Democratic Party, right? Which is going to be very interesting in light of, that'll be in the heat of primary season. Obviously this is just spoken, so I don't expect people to be taking notes necessarily. So if you want more information on those dates, like I said, January 16th, February 13th, March 12th, you can find those on the NYC DSA website. There's a calendar there. Or if you're on Facebook, you can go to Central Brooklyn DSA's Facebook page, and there's an event Facebook events for those different sessions. We just had our first one last month. On what is democratic socialism. So a mix of sort of high level kind of what is X, Y, and Z, along with specific classes on history, theory. It's really open to people of all ages, all experiences in terms of organizing, all experiences in terms of, you know, reading Marx, et cetera. So I really, if you're listening to this, then it seems like you'd probably want to come out to Central Brooklyn DSA's upcoming Socialist Night School session. So please check those out.
Yeah, and if you want to, as Robbie mentioned, if you want to put a face to a voice, I will be the lead facilitator or giving the lecture on the first session, What is Capitalism, on January 16th, Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. at Repair the World. I'd love to see some RPM and WBAI listeners come attend. And I think Robbie framed the purpose of this in a really important way. We're not trying to indoctrinate people in a line in a specific way to think. We're a big tent organization. What we're hoping to do is ask the right questions so that we can collectively build working class power and think about the right ways to do that. So, Robbie, I just really want to thank you for coming on and talking about this upcoming night school series. Is there anything you want to add or anything you want to highlight before you jump off?
No, just, you know, thank you to Jack. And, you know, sort of like we were saying, come to night school. And go to a canvas, go to an anti-war protest, right? And be able to reflect, and then, you know, go out, get your boots on the ground, get your hands dirty, and then come reflect on how that, you know, feeds into these larger theories and structures that we're talking about. So it's that constant back and forth between action and reflection that I think is really going to be the way forward for a working class socialist movement.
That's a perfect note to end on, and I couldn't have put it better myself. So I just want to remind our listeners that you are tuning in to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com, or you can sign up for our newsletter to get links to what we talk about on the show. You can do that on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. You can also find us on Twitter at NYCRPM. Today, we've been talking about the potentially devastating war with Iran, as well as highlighting political education efforts by NYC DSA here in Central Brooklyn. We have about 10 minutes left in the show, so at this time, we'd love for you to call in and talk to us. Please call at 212-209-2877. Again, that's 212-209-2877. If you have a perspective on what is going on in terms of this potentially devastating imperial war against Iran, if you want to share your thoughts on that, if you maybe attended one of the protests this weekend, we'd love to hear what you have to say. If you want to ask more questions about this night school series, I'm happy to answer them. If you just have any thoughts that you want to share, please call in. We'd love to hear from you. It would be really great to get your perspective. It looks like I think we have a couple callers coming in. We're about to hear from you. We'd love to hear anything you have to say about maybe socialism is the subject you want to discuss. You got a critique of capitalism. We'd love to hear it. So we've got our first caller is about to be live on WBAI. You are live on Revolutions Per Minute. What's your name? What's your comment?
Hello, I'm Zabby, and my comment is that we have some economic class war to fight right now, this minute, and I hope that your class and all of you are working against Mr. Bloomberg. Mr. Bloomberg is, yes, he spoke at the 2016 Democratic Convention. The man is a silent horse running this race, and he's going to use his money to try to buy this election. And he already has support from people who are conservatively bent, saying, well, you know, he manages money well. Here he was a he was Republican and turned Democrat now. I'm telling you, I hope you're on the ground because Bernie Sanders needs all the help he can to fight against Bloomberg.
Thank you very much for that comment. NYCDSA is absolutely organizing for Bernie and against politicians and billionaires like Michael Bloomberg, who has unleashed who unleashed devastating consequences for the poor and working people, especially black and brown communities here in New York City. It looks like we've got another caller live on WBAI. You're live on Revolutions Per Minute. What's your name and what's your question or comment?
Hi, my name is Arnold. I'm calling from Peekskill, New York.
Hey, Arnold, how's it going?
Very well. Just talk about the possibility of war with Iran. Yes, I was speaking to people that I know, and they know very little about the history of Iran. All they know about Iran is the hostage crisis, 41 years ago. It's amazing. Most Americans have a tremendous lack of history.
Yeah, I think it's really, really important to highlight, especially the 1953 coup against Mossadegh, mm-hmm. who was a social democratic leader who was trying to nationalize resources and had a very secular vision. And the U.S. backed a brutal military dictator in the Shah and helped him seize power. Thank you very much for that comment. I think centering history is absolutely crucial. We have another caller I want to make sure that we get to before we wrap up. Hey, you are live on Revolutions Per Minute. What's your name and what's your question?
Hey, Steve calling in. I would love to be in Congress right now to ask them the question before the Defense Committee, the National Defense Committee. I would like to ask them the question, since we know the fact that there are Navy SEAL war criminal, Eddie Gallagher, that was pardoned by 45, was at Mar-a-Lago during Christmas with his family, right? I wonder how much his weight weighed in on this drone attack at the Baghdad airport. That's what I would like to know. I would like to ask them. I would like the senators and everybody to ask the Defense Committee that question. Because it was like a joint meeting of war criminals at Mar-a-Lago during Christmas, I guess,
Oh, absolutely.
They know more about this than we do.
Yeah, I think that's a really excellent point. Thank you for bringing it up. I hope Congress does. I think Gallagher is just one of many war criminals, imperialists who are pushing for what would be a brutal, barbaric war with Iran. I believe we have one more caller. How's it going? You are live on Revolutions Per Minute. What's your name and what's your comment or question?
Yes, the name's Christian. I forgot your name, so I'm so sorry.
No worries, it's Jack.
Jack, how you doing? I remember when this thing, you were covering the election of for the Queen's VA.
Oh, Tiffany Caban, yes.
Yeah, we all thought it was Miss Caban, and it's so disgusting what happened. But as far as what's going on now, there was a movie that came out. I forgot the name, but it was Kristen Stewart, the chick from Twilight. And an Iranian actor named Payman Mahdi, and he was inside a prison, was in Guantanamo Bay prison. And the movie was basically, it sent a message, like the troops, when they get to know like detainees on a personal level, they realize they're not bad people. We haven't learned from that. I don't understand.
Yeah, I think
did anyone in the administration even watch that movie, excuse me, and learn something from that? That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for bringing up that point. I think the way that war and really empire dehumanizes these populations, they become otherized. We don't think of them as human beings. But the reality is that the vast majority of people in this country have far more in common with the vast majority of people in Iran than the people who lead and rule this country. And the critical thing is to stand in solidarity and build international working class power if we want to overcome this dehumanizing violence. So we have one last brief clip that we're going to roll. That's a preview for our interview with Jabari Brisport, who is running for the state assembly, the state Senate here in New York in 2020. So we're going to hear from him right now.
tonight because, like we say, not be us. You believe in a New York State and a country and a world where everyone, regardless if they don't even look like you or don't even believe the same things that you do, or maybe they don't even like you because you're a cursed liberal or a cursed socialist, you believe they have the right to health care. And you believe their children have the right to education. And you believe they all have the right to clean water. And I'm happy that you're all fighting here with me today. It's people like you that trudge out on a cold, like, dank January night for a political event. Because you all know that there are thousands of people that are homeless in this state. And you know there are millions of people that are uninsured in this country. You know there are billions of people on this planet who are at risk of climate change. You know there are trillions of dollars at stake and another war we're about to launch into in the Middle East. But you know what? Because you're here and because you're supporting and because you're fighting and we're fighting together, in about 3 months, I'm going to be successfully on the ballot. In about 6 months, in June, I will be winning my New York State Senate primary. In about 7 months, in July, Bernie Sanders will walk out of the DNC with the Democratic nomination. It's because of people like you coming here and fighting and believing in something that's greater than any one of us individually. 12 months from now, January 2020, I'll be going to Albany and Bernie Sanders will be going to the White House.
That was Jabari Brisport, a New York City DSA-endorsed state Senate candidate at a Brooklyn fundraiser for his campaign, as well as for Bernie Sanders. Next week, we'll have Jabari on the show to talk about the grassroots organizing it will take to win his race, as well as elect a socialist to the White House. This is Lee Zishi for Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI. Back to you, Jack.
And that's it for today. You've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. And you will hear from us next week, at Tuesday at 5 p.m. Oh, yes,